This is Grin and Grind It, a podcast where I chat with fellow WTF women, trans, femme athletes who are kicking ass and smiling through defeat and victory in their sport. I hope this podcast encourages you to stray outside your comfort zone, to think about the world differently, and to accept people for who they are. If a show resonates with you, please send it to a friend or family, because sharing is caring. Thanks for tuning in. If you like what you're listening to, please consider becoming a patron to keep this podcast alive. Patreon is a platform for people like me to get paid for what they love to do. You can subscribe for as little as $2 per month, which helps me pay for this podcast because I don't have any sponsors. I run this out of my own wallet and my own free time. So if you like what you're hearing, you want to support me, you can visit my page at www.patreon.com/grinandgrindit. Thanks for listening. I interviewed an old teammate, Ash Hall, about their favorite kind of bike racing, alley cats. We learn why some people are given tables at checkpoints and how urban races are way more gender inclusive than any other race right now, like incorporating a WTF category. We also chatted about their experience racing under USAC and BRAC and having to choose between two sexes, and the bullying they endured at road races. Tell us about yourself and the kind of racing at least you used to do, because I don't know if you're still doing it.
I am Ash, and currently I'm a teacher, which means my summers are free to do many a bike thing. And I still occasionally do urban racing, so urban crits, alley cats, urban cyclocross, messenger style races. That's my jam.
Wait, what's an urban cyclocross race, then?
It's like a cyclocross race, but way more DIY.
Yeah.
It's little groups will do it, and then you'll just show up, and they will have a course laid out in some kind of sketchy places.
Yeah.
Or they won't have a course laid out very well.
Is it, like, in a city, though?
They'll be in the city, or, like, in abandoned places.
Oh, my God.
In general, like, places... Like, the joke is with cyclocross is, like, you take your road bike where you're not supposed to, but for real, where you're not supposed to.
Yeah.
So.
Oh, my God.
You know, old construction sites. Whatever.
Wow.
Whatever.
Do a lot of people get hurt doing this?
You do sign paperwork that says that it's your fault if you get hurt. Mm. But for the most part, the people who do it are kind of, like, they've already been hit by cars. Whatever.
Yeah. Oh, my God. So how did you get into this sort of, like, courier urban racing stuff?
Well, I was commuting a lot. I actually, in my early 20s, I had a stroke, and the doctor said you need to exercise a lot more. And so I had really bad knees, and I got into biking, and I just biked all over the city, commuted everywhere, started biking really long distances, and I had a friend that was doing it that I'd gone to college with, and he was like, one of these races is coming up. I think you'd be good at it. And so I did it, and I had so much fun, and then I just kept doing them, and got even better at them, and just kept going. And
yeah. What makes them fun?
Everyone is different. They're very challenging. They're not just physically taxing and challenging, but you have to be so quick on your toes. It's when you're commuting in a city, the course isn't, your way to work isn't blocked off. So yeah. You have to be very mindful about where you're going, what's happening around you, adapting as things come and go between, like, construction. And it's just, there's rules to them, but there's no route to them. And that's the part that I love very much, is the type of race, the alley cats, which is what I'm very good at, is it's just a list of addresses. And they say, you start here and you finish here, you have X amount of time to get it done. We don't care in what order.
Yeah.
We're not going to tell you that. That's up for you to decide. And then you just sit there. Every race is different. And even when you're racing against people and you see people you're racing with, you have no idea who's in front of you because the odds of you guys taking the same course are slim.
Yeah.
So who knows?
Do you guys get tags and stuff? Like, you know how they do it with, like, the road races and stuff?
Some of them do. The bigger ones, you'll get a tag for. I did one in Minneapolis, the Powderhorn 24, and that one you were given a tag for. Babes in Bike Land you're given a tag for, and the Knack you're given a tag for.
Okay.
So those ones you get tagged and marked so people can track you through the city. But those events are normally, you know, more than a quick hour or two.
Okay. And then how are the other ones ran? Like, how do you know who's in lead?
You don't until everyone crosses finish line.
Oh, no shit.
So, and some of them, what's common out here is that the list of addresses is called a manifest. And so you're all given a manifest at the start. And you just do whatever's on the manifest. Sometimes you have to go grab items and deliver them elsewhere. Sometimes you just need to show up in a certain order.
Oh, weird.
But essentially, you'll get your manifest, and once you finish it, you'll either be done with it or, surprise, another manifest, and they'll just start whittling it down.
Okay.
So some of the races, you have no idea how long you're in for. It could be an hour or six.
Holy shit. Because I was just going to ask, like, is it timed or is it distance?
Some of them are timed. Very rarely are they distance because you don't get to decide the route.
Yeah.
They can give you a suggestion that says, some races I've done that say, you have three manifests. If you do the manifest right, each one's 20 miles.
Oh.
So if you do it correct, you're going to be doing no less than 60 miles.
Right.
If you do it wrong, like, you 180 miles later.
Yeah.
So some of them are timed. When I did Powderhorn 24, it's 24 hours.
Yeah.
And it's kind of a cross between an alley cat and a crit. So it's open streets, and it's a loop through this part of town in Minneapolis. And it's a 5-mile loop. And there's checkpoints to make sure you make the whole loop. And then every hour, there's a fifth checkpoint.
Mm.
And it goes away. So every hour, the course changes.
Oh, my God.
And so you, for that race, it's done in a fun point style. So you can get a point for every traditional lap you do and a point for every of the cycling checkpoints, the ones that go in and out. And so you can either do it by distance or by point value.
Good God.
So this year I won the point value one, but lost the distance. But oh. That being said, I rode 178 miles in a single go.
Jesus God.
The person who beat me did 188 miles.
And they beat you because they did more, the most distance?
They did two more laps. But oh. I won in points because I hit all the mysterious extra checkpoints.
Okay. And how do you know if you've come across, like, this the checkpoints? Or
They give you a list of addresses.
Okay.
It's literally just, they gave us a 8.5 by 11, and it had 24 different addresses on it. Yeah. And it gave you a window when they were open.
Okay.
And so you just try to figure out if where it fits on your route.
Okay. And then, so, and you said it's open. So does that mean, like, do you have to go, like, get off your bike and then go inside?
Yeah.
Okay. What do you have to do when you get inside?
It depends. A lot of these races are sponsored through local businesses. Oh. And so, you know, some of them I've done where a yoga studio will be a sponsor, and so you have to do 5 minutes of yoga in their studio, which is really jarring if you've biked for 12 hours.
Yeah.
And you're used to just sitting head down, just going, and then suddenly you have to get off the bike and do some other movement. It's very disorienting.
That's wild.
And then you get back on, and you go at it again.
Yeah.
So you're literally biking into a mystery.
What about when you have to, like, get things?
You have no idea what you're getting.
Okay.
It could be an envelope, or it could be like an entire table. You just don't know.
What happens if you get a fucking table?
What normally means you're an asshole. When the North American Cycle Courier Championship was hosted in Denver 3 years ago, I made it to the finals. And that is, there's regional versions of these races, and then courier companies, messenger companies, or individual people will petition to come out to do NAC. And so it'll be 400 people show up to do the North American one. And it gets whittled down over a week. It's a week's worth of work, essentially. You are biking the equivalent of a messenger would over a course of a week. And I was the only not dude to make it to finals in Denver that year who was actually from the city. And so the people who organized that race were from here, and they generally have a rule, and the rule is don't be an asshole.
Yeah.
If you're an asshole, then you can either be disqualified, or something else can happen to you. So that year, this guy was just absolutely so rude to the volunteers. Like, these are people who are taking their days off to run races. These races are huge. There's 400 people, like, biking around. Like, they want to make sure that you're taken care of, and an event can run smoothly. But this guy, he's very quick, but he's very rude. And so at one checkpoint, he was arguing with a volunteer, and he was complaining that the box she was going to hand him was too big. It wasn't realistic enough for a race. So she got mad and took the delivery tag that is assigned to him. It has his name on it. You only get X amount. They all need to make it back to the finish line. She got mad at him, and she stuck it on the side of a folding table. And he had to carry a folding table, card table, that weighed like 50 pounds.
Oh my god.
Through an industrial area of Denver.
Did he do it?
Well, he had to, or he'd be disqualified.
Oh my god, that's hilarious.
So... But, you know, in those races, you know, general rule is, like, the more serious level of competition in those races are people who are bike messengers, and it is understood, like, you need to treat these races like a job. You would never be rude to somebody in a job, or you wouldn't have a job.
Right.
And so that is always a fun aspect, to have people come in who are just, like, so gung-ho, like, into their racing mode that they cannot do anything else about it, which is interesting, because some of those people who started to do the Alley Cat races in other states I've been to are road racers, and it's very hard for them to blend right in.
I believe that.
They can't like do anything other than biking, and biking is about a third of it.
What's an Alley Cat?
Alley Cat is the type of race where you get a manifest with a list of addresses, and you try to figure out the best way through a city. Okay. Sometimes the fastest way is through an alley.
Jesus.
Sometimes you have to get off your bike and run up some stairs.
Yeah.
Like in a cycle cross race, so.
Oh my god. Yeah. Okay, so then there's Alley Cats. What other kind of, like, races are there?
There's Alley Cats and urban crit races, which are, like, traditional road crit races, but oftentimes the course won't be closed down all the way or not at all, and instead of being, like, 1 mile loops, there are more miles.
Oh, okay. So you have to dodge cars.
Yes.
Jesus.
You do have to dodge cars.
Oh, wow.
So.
And do they make categories like how, like, USAC and BRAC does it? Or how are the categories?
So the categories are, it's changed over the years and it's gotten a lot more gender inclusive. So before, it would be just a general, just anybody. Everybody's in one category, winner takes all. And then it started to be split up by women and men's, and then it started to be split up by ability level and gender. And so there, if you do some Alley Cats, it'll have like a pro series and then like an amateur one, and pro is like, you're a bike messenger, like, you're going to compete up here. And then the amateur one is like, you're like a commuter.
Yeah.
If you are a commuter who does a lot of these and does well, you can move up into the other category. But now I'm seeing them split a lot by not just ability, but like really a lot of different gender variants. So,
oh, cool.
The race that I did last in Minnesota had how a USAC race would be men's, women's, senior, junior. But they also had a trans and non-binary category, which was the category I got to race in, which was super exciting. One, because there were enough racers to justify having that, and there were 12 of us in that category.
Oh, sick.
We raced that year.
Oh my god.
So I was like, yes. And then even up into the courier style races, NAC, Denver, 3 years ago when they hosted it, was the first year they had... the overarc for it is called the WTF, a Women Trans Femme category.
Mm-hmm.
New York had NAC the year after, and they had just specifically a trans category, so I was the first person to race NAC under the trans category that year it came out. So that was super exciting.
And how long ago was that?
That would have been like 2 years ago, three years ago at this point.
Yeah.
So, but even just seeing like a lot more of that coming up. There's track racing that which is new here in Colorado because we have the Boulder Velodrome. Mm-hmm. But in the Midwest, track racing is is old. They still have wooden bike tracks out there that people maintain.
Yeah.
And so they've been able to do more DIY events out there as well that aren't run through USAC. So outside of Milwaukee and Minneapolis, there's a track, and they have the Coachella Classic, which is a track group that is a WTF track team.
Okay.
And they run their own series.
Oh, wow.
Out there. And so you can go race under a trans category in a velodrome race.
That's
out there. And that's super exciting to see that happening.
I know.
It's creeping into other places.
So for the naive folks, tell me about the WTF community.
It is a lot of fiercely independent people. Bicycle land is very bro heavy.
Yes.
And a lot of times what you see is, women don't want to be in that category. So either they'll pop out and just be like fiercely independent, but not incorporate other groups of people in, where it's just like you're a guy or you're a girl and there's nothing else.
Yeah.
And if you don't fit in here, then like you're not going to feel welcomed anywhere. And then there's WTF communities that focus a lot on gender variance. So a WTF category will be any person can race in that category who doesn't benefit from cis male privileges. So if you were born a dude and you identify as a dude and you look like a dude, you're just being the male category.
Mm-hmm.
Got everything going for you.
Right.
If you are not any of that, then you race into these categories and then they get broken up. So it's a lot of gender non-conforming people, women of different abilities, trans people. So it's been super exciting to just see this group of people come out and want to bike and want to race and kind of feel like they have a safe space to do it. So, and it's trickling. I used to go out to the Midwest because there was a very large community out there, and starting to see it more out here in Denver and out west as well, and even in Arizona, they have WTF categories for some of their DIY stuff.
What races have you seen in Denver that have it?
The DIY cyclocross races.
Okay.
And the DIY hill climbing races. The Alley Cats, they have them. The Courier races will start to have them. Bicycle groups, Loops Denver is an old urban, like an older urban group. They do a weekly ride. They now are starting to have WTF events. There's just WTF groups. I started one several years back in Denver called the Denver She Devils. And
are you serious? I didn't know that.
Yeah, and then we really pushed into shops to be more gender inclusive, bike shops.
Yeah.
And finally, bike shops were starting to do it. Some bike shops are starting to have, women, trans, femme, bike open shop nights and classes and demos and really setting up spaces like that. So that's been good to see. I remember going down to Tucson and I did a bike race one summer and it was very gendered and very bro heavy. And then I came back 2 years later and they had a person doing my registration, was another trans person. It was great to be like, hey,
that's cool.
I feel really seen right now. So
yeah,
it's, there are a lot of people in different parts of the country that are pushing for that more gender inclusiveness in bigger events, pushing back against USAC a lot, even all the way up to like Olympic level athletes, starting to see a lot more trans visibility. It's like coming up, what does it mean to be a trans female athlete? Like, where do you fit in? And so that kind of dialogue is being started, and hopefully it'll filter on down more. Or bubble up, whatever direction it comes from.
Bubble up, yeah.
Bubble up from the bottom or trickle down. But.
So what if there was someone who wanted to put on a race and they wanted to be, like, gender inclusive, right? What would be, like, the best way to go about that? Like, if they had never done that before, like, what would be... I don't know, a good way to jump into that?
I mean, for any event, I think you just need to ask, like, who do I want showing up at this event?
Yeah.
You know, it needs to be accessible. You know, if you make, even with USAC, you know, if you make an event and you want to have a juniors category, you have to make that accessible.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, just making sure that things are accessible to people, especially WTF riders who want to do bike racing, is, you know, they haven't had the space to do it. Mm-hmm. They don't have the, you know, extensive background, and as far as like what it actually means to like show up to an event and do a group start. And so making sure that, you know, if that's people you want, just to make the space for it, you know, you can, you know, make it known, like, this, we have a women and trans femme category that you can sign up into, like, here's what that's going to look at, like, making sure that when you do time slots for races, that it's not like, oh, well, the women's time slot is at this time, but if, like, you guys don't start on time, then I guess you're just, like, lumped with the dudes, sorry, like, you know, making sure there's this, like, space for them, for abilities and for just, like, physical bodies.
That makes sense. Crap, I had another question, and then I lost it because I was focused. Well, okay, so I'll just change it. I remember when you were joining our team, and I don't know how the conversation went, because you talked to Lydia.
I did. I already know where this conversation
went. Okay, then you can tell me it.
Well, I wanted to join a bike racing group because I wanted to try out different races, road races. And so somebody said, this bike group has a good women's one. And I wasn't sure if I was going to fit in as a trans non-binary person. Any given place I go, people are like, I don't know what gender you are. And I'm kind of like, I don't know either.
Right.
It's fine. And so I called, and I had a little conversation over the phone, and I was like, how do you feel about having a trans rider in your women's group? And they were kind of like, I don't really know what that means, but okay. Which, you know, is better than some people being like, absolutely not.
Yeah.
Please don't. And so showing up, and then people being like, I don't know what to do with this person, but willing to work and seeing where that is, and just kind of keeping an open dialogue, and the group was great for that. USAC was less great for that. It's very gendered in USAC, so.
So how did that go down, like, or, you know, like, how did you feel when you had to pick a male or female?
I was always like, well, I have to go by what's on my license, which is female, and so I would click it, and then I'd show up. And the people on our race team pedal were like, oh, yeah, you're great, you're amazing, so glad you're here, look at you, you're ready to go, really encouraging. But I would be out on the course, and if it was another racing group, they'd be like, who the hell are, what gender are you, why are you riding here? It was kind of bullied a little bit, and so.
Are you serious?
Yeah. People would be, like, really rude. People, like, cut me off. People would, I don't know, say judgmenty, hurtful little comments under the breath while they pass me. And
are you fucking kidding me?
No, I'm not.
I didn't know that.
No, it was so, I'm just like, this is draining. And you know, like, even if that didn't happen in every single race, it was just like, the anybody who's like has the gender variant knows public restrooms are just always a nightmare. So it'd always be like, all right, gotta go to the restroom after we just did this race,
right?
Hey, everybody.
Yeah.
People can't see the pain looked on my face that I'm recreating right now, but so that was always awkward. So,
would you ever say anything back to the people talking shit?
Yeah, sometimes.
Yeah.
Sometimes. I would. And then people get real huffy about it.
God. Like, Did you notice, was it mostly guys or was it both women and men?
Surprisingly, it was men. It was not men as much.
Yeah.
At least for me, because I'm fairly masculine presenting. Whenever I have to deal with men in any sporting event, I kind of get like this passover of like, you're kind of like one of the bros, but not, so like, whatever. But it was with women that it was harder. It was women who were not in the. Women who are, like, in the 40 and above age group.
Oh.
It seemed hardest. They just, like, could not wrap their head around it.
Yeah.
And so, just me being in a space with them, I was like they were threatened that I was there. Because I just didn't look like them.
Right, yeah.
So, that was hard, for sure, dealing with. Certain places, track racing, that was less of a thing. People in the velodrome were kind of like, your thighs are big. I respect that.
Right.
But road racing, you know, people cannot see what I look like. I'm a stocky person. I'm very, very muscularly built. I am not light and aerodynamic. I have thighs that look like they could crush a watermelon. And so I don't look like this graceful, aerodynamic road warrior who's going to climb 100 mountains, but, you know.
I wouldn't even say that I look like that. I don't know who can climb 100 mountains just like that. Chris Froome?
Maybe.
Little, there's this YouTube video that I was watching, and this guy, he was, like, Australian, and he kept on calling Chris Froome a washing machine just because of, like, how fast he pedals. Like, his cadence is so fucking fast.
I have a friend, and he's really funny because he's on the other side of the gender kind of spectrum, is that he is dude, identifies as a dude. He is so small. He is built like the most graceful, tiny, muscly woman.
Yeah.
And he races mountain bikes. He's very good at it. He can just spin forever with his little chicken legs. And he'll often, he has really long, long, luscious mullet that he loves wear in his mountain bike racing. And he'll just, like, breeze through the finish line, and everyone always cheers for him. They're like, oh, and look at this girl go.
Oh,
yeah.
God.
You're going through. Way to get, girl. And he's like, I never want to correct them because I like the praise.
Aw, poor thing.
He's like, it's fine. I think we should just cheer for everybody who comes through.
Right? Oh, my gosh.
But I think that's when I picture someone climbing 100 mountains. It's probably him. Just me picturing my friend Skyler.
That's funny. Yeah. All right, so then we became friends since you joined the team and stuff, and then I didn't realize that you use different pronouns to describe yourself. So tell me more about that.
I use they, them pronouns, and I use them everywhere.
Do you?
I even use a gender-neutral pronoun honorific at my job, and they, instead of Mr. or Miss, I get called Mix, MX.
Oh, do you?
Yep.
That's cool.
And my paperwork and everything has it on there, so everyone knows.
How did you tell them about that?
I've worked in many school districts, and some of them, like in the giant city of Denver, were very rude about it, and they were like, what is that? We don't have time to figure out what that means. Like, just call it something that the kids will get. We don't want to argue with parents. Two, I live in a town named after Gun, smack dab in the middle of cowboy country, and I told my ultra-conservative-esque part of the state where I work, I was like, these are my pronouns, and this is the honorific I want to use at work, and they just said, okay.
Cool.
And I even asked, like, you're not going to argue this with me? And they said, I don't know why anyone would argue with you over your name.
That's cool.
And I was like, this is just how it should be.
Right.
So I use gender neutral pronouns everywhere.
When did you think about that? Like, when you were younger, has it always been like
that? I've always been very in between in gender. They say it sets in when you're like 4 years old, and I believe that.
Really?
I have always been that kid that my mother was like, gotta wear a dress, and I absolutely used to wear a dress.
Yeah.
And never, I just always wanted to live that, like, kind of in the middle lifestyle.
Yeah.
And so I do. And it's been good.
Yeah.
And what actually helped me through that, like, coming out process and, like, being my authentic self was being in a WTF bike community.
Yeah.
Going from, like, I'm a queer woman to I'm just a queer person. I'm genderqueer. This is who I am. And being really supported through a bicycle community going through that
was
really probably what, like, catapulted me to being my most authentic self.
Right. Well, and it's got to be that sort of offshoot of cycling community, because you're just saying, like, on the roadside, you were getting talked shit to. Obviously, I would assume it wasn't by everyone, but there was enough people that it shouldn't have fucking happened in the first place.
Yeah.
But
yeah, definitely that you know, the WTF DIY spaces, you know, everyone, it's just a bunch of really just kind of rough around the edges creative people who want to do different things on bicycles, and that fits right on in.
Yeah.
With that. And even some, you know, a lot of people that I know who are in these DIY communities, some of them, you know, they have USAC license. They do incredibly well at the sports that they do. A lot of track and a lot of cyclocross, they tour and they go to nationals and they do all the big stuff.
Oh, that's sick.
But then they love to come home and, I, you know, play around in the streets and roll around in the dirt and be weird.
Yeah.
And that's great.
That's cool. And now, what if someone wanted to, like, find, like, a WTF, like, race or part more community? Like, where would they even have to go to find that?
I would start with a bike shop.
Yeah.
I would start with a local bike shop. And I would say, where do you have women nights? Do you have gender inclusive nights,
mm-hmm.
or activities or groups that are run through here? And more places are starting to have it. Some places have open nights. Some have entire groups run out of them. You know, you can also just, people are starting to network more. Mm-hmm. I just got added to a group of WTF Bike Pack Explorers, and it's a network for all over the US for WTF people who want to go bikepacking.
Oh,
and
that's
so
cool.
You can start to, you probably right now just go into Google and type in women trans femme bicycle groups, and they'll start to pop up. And you know, if you live in a city that's big enough to have a courier company, start there.
Yeah.
The ones you're gonna throw DIY races, especially in the summertime.
Yeah.
They're like $5.
I know. Yeah, since I'm on BRAC, I'm trying to create like a, well, it was called the Women's Development Committee, and I'm trying to figure out a way to make it, yeah, more inclusive. But then since it's under BRAC, it's hard because it's like, I don't know how I can make it so that way if someone races in that race, they get points, so that way they can, like, cat up. But say they're not, they don't identify as female or male, so then you're like, well, how do we make that work? So I wonder if it has to just be a DIY thing.
I mean, start there, and
yeah.
I suppose if enough people start doing it, BRAC will notice. USAC will hopefully notice. I mean, that's what happened with, even in the DIY community,
mm-hmm.
the bike messenger races, very dude-heavy.
Yeah.
And then WTF people started carving out spaces, and then they, one region did it, and then another region. There's like an entire large kind of secret underground network for these races. So Denver has the Mile High Messenger Challenge, which is pretty much anybody in the Western U.S. can do it from like the Southwest up. Can compete. There's a whole section of these types of races in California and then the Pacific Northwest. The oldest one is Monster Track and Track or Die is in New York City. That's two that's two groups that will run really big alley cats, but if people do well in those, they can go to North American Cycle Courier Championship. Mm-hmm. But there's a European bracket of that, and a once a year, they do have a World Messenger.
That's cool.
Challenge.
Wow.
Which Ukraine had this year.
Oh my god.
Mexico City had it 1 year. Paris had it a couple years ago.
Wow.
So it's like Secret Olympics.
That's sweet.
Secret Bicycle Olympics.
Yeah, that's really cool.
So,
when's the next race coming to Denver?
They are hosting, I believe, starting the September 22nd. There is a group that's doing their series for urban kind of DIY cyclocross.
Okay.
And I want to say the group who leads that one's name is Team Meow.
I remember you sending me something like that, yeah.
So I think Timio's circuit starts, if you live, it's a really fun sentence to be able to say very seriously in a podcast. if you're in the Midwest, Coachella Classic is happening, and it's Coachella with a K, is happening in Milwaukee and Minneapolis.
Are you going to do that one?
That one already started, so I guess I could just drop in and hang out and go do one, but...
Uh-huh. When's the next race you're going to do?
I don't know. I just did two, and I feel good. I won them both, so I'm like...
That's sick.
Yeah. No one can see this super cool t-shirt of this skull just throwing up some words on it.
That's sweet. Is that what you won?
This is the race I won.
That's cool. So what was the race?
The Mile High Messenger Challenge 5. So...
Why was it 5?
Because that's the 5th one they've done.
Oh, okay. I guess that makes sense. What sort of awards do they give you if you win?
You'll get... Some races, you'll do cash awards.
Oh, that'd be sick.
Which is mostly, like, winner takes all. But it's a lot of product sponsored. So this race I won, and I got a custom-made bicycle messenger work bag, which was probably, like, $300. It's a $300 bag.
That's so cool.
So, other ones I've won entire bikes.
Oh my god.
Tickets to go elsewhere in the U.S. I won, the year I did NAC, I won tickets to go to the World Cup.
That's sick. So I'm racing the wrong races, because I just get a medal sometimes. Or a glass. We have so many freaking glasses now. Like, we had, like, an empty shelf above, like, the glasses that my grandma gave us when we moved into a house. And now the top shelf is getting filled because of all the fucking glasses that I get at these races. I'm like, I don't want a glass anymore. I have
probably more backpacks than any. The joke for me is if anyone who's ever is around me in races knows that if there is a backpack or a bag up for grabs, I'm winning it. Doesn't matter. If I try or not, that's what I always end up. So I have thousands and thousands and thousands and thousands of dollars of bicycle bags. So from $600 work bags to travel bags to crazy shit. So I sell them off all the time. I still have, like, I don't know, 12 backpacks.
Well,
it's a lot.
At least you'd be able to sell those off. I can't really sell a glass.
No, I can't.
That's probably why they give them to us.
They're just like, here you go.
Yep.
Jerseys, win a lot of clothes.
Oh, wow.
Bike products, wheels.
Oh, my God. Bike. That's sick. Wow.
And I will tell you right now, anybody who's listening to this, if you want to host a DIY bicycle event and race, you just contact bicycle companies and they will just, like, give you so much free shit.
Wow, that's crazy.
Avis Locks, we used to partner with them all the time. They would give, like, they would send out, like, $150 backpacks, like, $100 locks, like, clothing. They would just, like, here you go, have it.
Wow.
Beer companies love that. Pabst Blue Ribbon will give you the craziest things with their logo on it for bike race prizes. Velocity Rims will...
That's sweet.
Bicycle companies will give you things.
Maybe I'll just do a DIY race, and it'll just be a WTF race.
Do it.
And then it'll be one time slot for men.
Yeah, that's. I know a lot of groups that'll do it where women WTFs don't pay and men do.
Yeah. Oh my god.
Or it'll be like WTFs $5 suggested donation, men $15 to race.
I love that.
So,
I don't know how far I'd get with Brack, but I love that idea.
Start from the bottom.
I should.
Chip away from the bottom.
I know. Chip away at something.
Chip away at something.
That's sweet.
So there you go.
Cool. Wow. Well, thanks for talking to me. Yeah. This has been fun.
Thanks for coming over and hanging
out. I didn't realize, like, all of this urban...
It's so secret.
Stuff. It is, and that's what makes it cool, actually.
That is what makes it cool. Babes in Bike Land got a little less underground, and they ended up having... Conveniently enough, 666 women WTF racers show up to their last event, but they did not have the permits for that many, and so they realized that it was way too much to organize a DIY event at that size. They stopped doing alley cats, and now they do smaller events, but...
Wow.
I'm just saying.
If you build it, they will come.
If you build it and keep it consistent and well-organized, people will
and come. Have sponsors
and have sponsors. People will come. But you know,
sweet.
It was $10 to do the race.
That's sweet.